Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Sunstone Podcast, where there is always more than one way to Mormon. I'm Stephen Carter, and I'm here to introduce this episode. But first, I want to let you in on a little secret. The Sunstone Summer Symposium is coming up the last weekend of July. Even though it's the busiest weekend of my year, it's also my favorite. I've actually been going to the symposium since 2007, and I went before that, but then I moved 3,000 miles away to Alaska, so I couldn't really make it. Hopefully, you have already submitted your presentation idea for the symposium. If you haven't, you still have time. The call for papers ends April 1st. But here's the really cool part. I know the symposium coordinator, and she gave me a code for 30% off of full registration or one-day registration to the symposium. But obviously, only people who listen to the Sunstone Podcast can have this discount. You're kind of special that way. But we made it pretty tricky. The code is SunstonePod, all one word, case insensitive. However, you have to use it by April 20th, and I promise you that the price only goes up after that, no matter how much tithing you pay. So head over to sunstone.org/registration. So, I've been watching the rise of artificial intelligence on the internet. And so far, I've been most tickled by AI art, especially the stuff that, you know, shows what Mad Max would look like if it had Muppets in it. But I've also been reading the dire predictions. While AI is going to entertain me today by showing me what it would look like if Wes Anderson directed Dune, tomorrow it will take my job, and the day after that, it will kill me. Sounds like a pretty healthy relationship. So I was really excited when I landed this article about Mormonism and AI for the next issue of Sunstone. In fact, the article was so much fun that I can't wait for the magazine to come out, so I'm going to present it to you now! AI is still going to kill us, but at least now we can have some theological fun with it before we go. The article is entitled, Creating Moral Agents: The Similarities Between AI Risk and the Plan of Salvation, by R.W. Ritchie. According to his bio, R.W. Ritchie can be found at wearenotsaved.com, where he posts reviews of all the books he reads, along with essays on technology, religion, risk, and eschatology, which, for those of us who do not have a divinity degree, is the study of what happens to us after death. So I guess he studies zombies? Well, without further ado, if you've been following the news, you've probably heard of ChatGPT, an artificial intelligence, or AI, with the ability to generate amazingly detailed and coherent responses to complicated questions. ChatGPT is just the latest example of a rapid improvement in AI capabilities stretching back over the last 10 to 15 years. The first example of AI most people remember occurred back in 2011 when IBM's Watson beat Ken Jennings at Jeopardy. Since then, Google's DeepMind beat the world champion at the notoriously difficult game of Go. And AI-assisted deepfake videos have not only caused people to scratch their heads in amazement, but in 2019, suspicion that a video of the Gabonese president was a deepfake sparked an actual coup attempt. In all these instances, AI has proven to be better than humans at doing things, at least in specific domains. The attempted coup illustrates some of the worrying usages to which this technology can be put. Other potential harms we're already seeing include facial recognition and internet surveillance by oppressive governments, virtual assistants that listen to everything we say, mining our private lives for marketing, AI-powered automation leading to massive job losses. This last worry is the one you'll most commonly hear from the average individual. But when you ask the experts, their biggest worry is our limited ability to determine how AIs make their decisions. As one example, consider this snippet about an AI-assisted medical diagnostic tool. Quote, in 2015, a research group at Mount Sinai Hospital in New York was inspired to apply deep learning to the hospital's vast database of patient records. This data set features hundreds of variables on patients, drawn from their test results, doctor visits, and so on. The resulting program, which the researchers named Deep Patient, was trained using data from about 700,000 individuals, and when tested on new records, it proved incredibly good at predicting disease. Without any expert instruction, Deep Patient had discovered patterns hidden in the hospital data that seemed to indicate when people were on the way to a wide range of ailments, including cancer of the liver. There are a lot of methods that are pretty good at predicting disease from a patient's records, says Joel Dudley, who leads the Mount Sinai team. But, he adds, quote, "This was just way better," unquote. At the same time, Deep Patient is a bit puzzling. It appears to anticipate the onset of psychiatric disorders, like schizophrenia, surprisingly well. But since schizophrenia is notoriously difficult for physicians to predict, Dudley wonders how this was possible. He still doesn't know. The new tool offers no clue as to how it does this. If something like Deep Patient is actually going to help doctors, it will ideally give them the rationale for its prediction, to reassure them that it's accurate and to justify, say, a change in the drugs someone is being prescribed. Quote, "We can build these models," Dudley says ruefully, "but we don't know how they work," unquote. This lack of an obvious explanation comes from the way these systems are constructed. The results they produce are based on connections between hundreds of billions of parameters. As a result, their reasoning is impossible to disentangle. As you can see, with the example of Deep Patient, we're quickly reaching a point where we have many systems that perform better than their human counterparts. But we don't know exactly what connections they're seeing that we're not. As an article from Scientific American put it, these systems are notoriously opaque. The risk of AI. Distilling all this, we see two things. One, advances in computing power, combined with deep neural networks and lots of training data, are allowing rapid and dramatic improvements in the capabilities of AI. Two, but the same technology which is driving these advances doesn't allow us to ever have a detailed understanding of how the AIs arrive at their decisions. When you consider the rapid pace of AI development, combined with our lack of understanding, it's not surprising to hear increasing calls for caution and study among laypeople and experts alike. And while people aren't generally panicked about the current state of AI, its rapid progress leads to lots of worries about where it will be in a few more years. Much that once seemed purely speculative is now being talked about as inevitable. Most of the speculation centers on the idea of artificial general intelligence, or AGI. An AGI would have two particularly concerning attributes. Number one, general intelligence. Currently, we have lots of AIs that can do one thing well: play chess, draw pictures, identify faces. But ongoing research is attempting to combine the performance of disparate AIs into a single AI, one that can perform any task a human could. Number two, agency. As we saw with Deep Patient, AIs use opaque methodology to reach their decisions. Researchers expect that this opacity will eventually extend to AIs having goals and desires which may be hidden from us. General intelligence and agency, taken together, create a reasonable approximation of consciousness. And for the remainder of this essay, this is the term that will be used. How might an AI use consciousness? At the moment, we simply have no idea. But one way to imagine it is to think about how a child approaches the world. For example, we could imagine a child watching their mother put on lipstick and using their rudimentary intelligence to conclude that lipstick is good. Later, when their mother isn't around, they might use their agency to put lipstick all over themselves, their baby brother, and the walls. When the horrified mother encounters the mess, she's not thinking about free will or consciousness, though the child arguably has both. Her only thoughts are about the negative and unexpected consequences of the giant mess her child has created. Accordingly, it's important to remember that the label of consciousness is, more than anything, a placeholder, and that AIs are already creating messes. These concerns have given rise to the new discipline of AI risk, where scientists and researchers are interested in making sure this technology remains safe. Given how fast things have been developing, these efforts partake in a great deal of anticipatory modeling. As researchers construct models around the direction they believe AI is headed, they have uncovered surprising parallels to the plan of salvation, which also very much involves intelligence and agency. What are the risks of a conscious AI? The world currently has 7.5 billion conscious entities, i.e. humans, and barring the occasional Stalin and Hitler, they're generally manageable. Why do AI researchers believe that an artificial intelligence with consciousness is potentially so much more dangerous than a human with consciousness? They offer at least four reasons. Number one, superintelligence. Human intelligence has many limiters, including the speed of neuron firing, the size of the brain, and the limit on our working memory. Artificial intelligence would have none of these limitations. Once scientists figure out how to create intelligence using a computer, they can always add more processors, more memory, more storage. The AI doesn't need a brain small enough to carry around on its body. So, an AI could plausibly think a million times faster than a human and access a trillion times more information. Number two, self-improving. If human-level intelligence can create a human-level AI, then a greater level of intelligence could create a proportionally greater intelligence. In theory, this could become a positive feedback loop with no upper bound. Or, as I.J. Goode, who worked with Alan Turing to decrypt the Enigma machine, said all the way back in 1965, quote, "Let an ultra-intelligent machine be defined as a machine that can far surpass all the intellectual activities of any man, however clever. Since the design of machines is one of these intellectual activities, an ultra-intelligent machine could design even better machines. There would then unquestionably be an intelligence explosion, and the intelligence of man would be left far behind. Thus, the first ultra-intelligent machine is the last invention that man need ever make, provided that the machine is docile enough to tell us how to keep it under control." Unquote. Number three, immortality. Stalin and Hitler had many horrible qualities, but they had one quality which ultimately put an end to their evil. They died. AIs probably won't have that quality. This is good if their goals line up with humanity's goals, but what if they don't? Number four, no clear morality. None of the other qualities are all that bad until you combine them with this final attribute. AIs have no built-in morality. Humans have thousands of years of culture, religious injunctions, and admonitions to draw on, along with the example of parents and other associates. Beyond these cultural and religious norms, there's the behavior encoded by evolution, emotions like fear, hunger, and desire. AIs won't come with any of these emotions by default, and they definitely won't have any religion, nationality, or ancestors except in the most metaphorical sense. Without any of these, it's very unlikely that they will end up with a morality similar to our own. For AI researchers, each of these four qualities suggests several potential dangers which might emerge from advancement in artificial intelligence. First, most species act in ways that benefit themselves. In the same way, a conscious AI might act in ways which benefit itself and other AIs, but are detrimental to humanity, whether that's seizing resources or deciding that all available material, humans included, should be turned into a gigantic computer in order to enlarge the power of the AI itself. Second, even if scientists manage to avoid all the direct dangers and construct an AI which ignores its own interests and works solely for humanity's benefit, there are still numerous subtle ways that things could go wrong. Imagine, for example, we construct the AI to do only those things that increase average human happiness. It might decide that it can best fulfill these instructions by hooking individuals up to feeding tubes and installing electrodes that constantly stimulate the brain's pleasure center. It may seem obvious that this isn't what we meant, but will that be obvious to the AI? Finally, the previous two examples imagine some epic struggle between humans and AI, but it wouldn't necessarily require anything so dramatic. And it wouldn't necessarily require an AI of vast intelligence. It might require an AI only as smart as a reasonably competent molecular biologist. The threat of bioterrorism has recently been the subject of renewed interest in the wake of the COVID-19 pandemic, particularly the danger of artificially constructed diseases. Fortunately, this hasn't happened yet. In large part because it would be unimaginably evil, but also because its effects could easily turn against its creators. An AI wouldn't necessarily have a built-in reason to think bioterrorism is evil, and it wouldn't be affected by the pathogen. These three examples give us a sense of some of the risk foreseen by people working in AI. The question is, how likely is any of this? Luminaries such as Elon Musk, Bill Gates, and the late Stephen Hawking, along with lesser-known experts such as Nick Bostrom, Eleazar Yudkowsky, and Bill Hibbard, all feel the answer is likely enough that significant precautions should be taken. To rephrase I.J. Good, if someone accidentally creates a conscious AI that has no respect for human life or values, it might be the last mistake humanity ever makes. And artificial intelligence technology is advancing so rapidly that we could plausibly have a fully conscious, science fiction-level artificial intelligence developed within the next few decades. We might be able to slow the process by passing laws, but it's hard to say how effective that would be. Perfect obedience to any law is exceedingly rare, and there's no reason to think that laws prohibiting the development of conscious AIs would be the exception. Even if they were, every nation on Earth would have to pass such laws and ensure enforcement. What keeps a rogue actor from exceeding some hypothetical UN standards for CPUs in an artificial entity when the world is incapable of preventing North Korea from developing ICBMs? And if Moore's Law holds, whatever power one is trying to limit will become more and more accessible to a broader and broader range of individuals. The only remaining solution is to somehow instill morality into our AI creations. This is the primary focus of the discipline of AI risk. AIs and morality. Pulling together everything discussed so far, this is where AI research stands. We are on the verge of creating artificial intelligence. We need to ensure that it will be moral, so that we might be able to trust it with immense power. If we turn to the Book of Abraham, which describes the premortal life, we find a similar list. Quote, "Now the Lord had shown unto me Abraham the intelligences that were organized before the world was. And there stood one among them that was like unto God, and he said unto those who were with him, We will go down, for there is space there, and we will take of these materials, and we will make an earth whereon these may dwell. And we will prove them herewith to see if they will do all things whatsoever their Lord their God shall command them. And they who keep their first estate shall be added upon, and they who keep not their first estate shall not have glory in the same kingdom with those who keep their first estate. And they who keep their second estate shall have glory added upon their heads forever and ever. Unquote. This text reveals the same three points, only with slight differences. A group of intelligences exist. They need to be proved so that God might entrust them with greater power. In other words, the researchers trying to mitigate AI risk are faced with the same problem God faced in the pre-mortal life. The question that immediately occurs is, what are the similarities and differences between how God and AI researchers go about their task? One of the first things researchers suggest for mitigating AI risk is to isolate the AIs until their morality can be determined. This is often called boxing the AI. Isolating them prevents them from causing any harm and gives the researchers an opportunity to observe them. Denying them access to additional resources also keeps them from increasing their capabilities. But if we place an AI in the equivalent of a featureless room for the equivalent of eternity, then nothing is being tested. The AI needs an environment to interact with, preferably a world as identical as possible to our own. Ideally, the real world duplicated virtually. Most important is that they have a world where they can make realistic choices about morality that will reveal whether they can be trusted with more power. Thus far, the initial steps any researcher would take to test an AI are identical to the steps taken by God to test spirits. Quote, "We will take of these materials, and we will make an earth whereon these may dwell," unquote. And just as the researcher isolates the AI, God draws a veil of isolating forgetfulness over the earth and its inhabitants. Obedience. We could imagine an AI doing all sorts of things if it was placed in a virgin world without any direction. So how could we know if it was doing those things because it was evil or because it didn't know any better? To get information along these lines, we would need to provide some guidelines for the AI to follow. Similarly, according to Abraham, God provides us with commandments he expects us to follow in mortality. Indeed, laying down commandments is the first interaction God has with Adam and Eve. Obedience was important even in the pre-mortal life, and the importance of obedience has never diminished. Disobedience is one of the few ways to offend God. Now, the commandments from an AI researcher might be very different from God's commandments, but they have one thing in common: the importance of obedience. We would want to make sure that the AI would always defer to us. For example, if the AI concluded that humanity is inferior and should be wiped out, we would want to be able to overrule it, however ironclad its reasoning. In other words, we would want the AI to demonstrate complete and immediate obedience. The whole point behind insisting on absolute obedience is that we can't be sure how an AI is going to make its decisions. Should its reasoning conflict with things like the survival of humanity, we want the survival of humanity to win. Therefore, it makes sense to not just give the AI commandments that we would recognize as directly moral, such as don't harm others. We would also want to sprinkle in a few commandments that are entirely arbitrary, such as commanding it to spend a proportion of its operations factoring arbitrarily large prime numbers. Indeed, intentionally giving the AI's commandments it doesn't understand and seeing if it obeys them anyway would be a key factor in testing the AI's moral utility in real-world situations where the AI's desires conflict with our own. One religious parallel, familiar to most people, is when God commanded Abraham to sacrifice Isaac. This certainly falls into the category of something that seems illogical, not merely because murder is wrong, but because God had promised Abraham that his descendants would, quote, multiply as the stars of heaven, unquote. The fulfillment of this promise would have appeared impossible to Abraham if he killed his only heir. Despite this, Abraham did as he was commanded and passed the obedience test. From the point of view of an AI risk researcher, and apparently from God's, Exact obedience is critical before granting an intelligence access to immense power. Suffering. You might think, based on our discussion of obedience, that the test is over if you end up with a perfectly obedient AI. But it's more complicated than that. While we've already specified that choices would exist in the world we've created, we haven't said much about what those choices would be. At a minimum, the AI needs to have the option of violating the guidelines. It must have the ability to do things we'd rather it didn't, which, for our purposes, would count as sin. Once we've made this allowance, the existence of evil immediately follows. A multiple-choice test where all answers are correct doesn't tell you anything about the person taking the test. The option to do evil has to exist if you want to know whether an intelligent agent is good. Computer security specialists have developed something analogous, called a honeypot. The specialist will intentionally create a tempting vulnerability, something designed to draw hackers in, but which doesn't connect to anything important. The object is to monitor bad actors without running any risk. We can imagine creating similar honeypots for the AIs. The difficulty arises in deciding how to handle failure. If an AI is lured into a honeypot which simulates destroying the world, we would have no problems eliminating that AI. But what if it just falls for the honeypot that simulates an exit from isolation? What if it never fell for that honeypot again? What if it never fell for any honeypot again? Has it learned true obedience? Or has it simply figured out the test and is therefore avoiding future honeypots so it can be let out of isolation? Considering the opacity of AI logic, if an AI falls for even one honeypot, we can't plumb its intentions. We have no choice but to assume that it's a bad AI. To mitigate this possibility, we have to make it difficult, even painful, for the AI to be obedient. A simple multiple-choice test might be sufficient to determine whether someone should be given an A in algebra, but when qualifying an intelligence to wield immense power, we need a lot more than that. We're looking for intelligences that have such a strong sense of right and wrong that they'll be obedient even when it's painful. But remember that AIs are intelligent and will figure out any patterns we embed. So we can't always have the correct answer be the most painful answer, or suffering itself ends up being the red arrow pointing at the correct answer. Suffering has to be mostly random. Bad things have to happen to good AIs, and wickedness has to frequently prosper, just as the opposite is sometimes true. Only under these circumstances can we be sure that an AI follows commandments simply because they're commandments. Regardless of its precise structure, an effective test must make it difficult for the AI to be good and easy for it to be bad. It's interesting how similar to our own world this scenario is, full of evil, sin, and suffering, where intelligent agents are tempted to do wrong, horrible things happen to those that don't deserve it, and wickedness is rewarded. If it makes sense for an artificial intelligence, does it also make sense for other forms of intelligence? Rather than an indictment of God, or a proof that God does not exist, is our suffering in this fallen world essential to our proving? The role of other AIs. But here's one thing we haven't addressed yet. Considering how alien and unfathomable the logic of an AI is, do we even know what is tempting to an artificial consciousness? How do we know what works and what doesn't? Here, we might be able to use failed AIs to help us. Given the rigor of our process, many AIs have certainly failed the vetting process. But what do we do with them? How about giving them roles as the tempters of the AIs we're still testing? After all, they are more likely than we are to invent better tailored temptations. If they experience something similar to anger, jealousy, or envy, this would motivate them to drag down AIs that are still in the testing process. Once again, in LDS theology, we see exactly this scenario. We believe that when it came time for testing, Satan, or Lucifer as he was then called, proposed an entirely insufficient test, enforced obedience, and took a third of the initial intelligences with him. We believe that those intelligences are allowed to tempt us here on Earth. LDS theology has a role for failed intelligences, but what about a perfect intelligence? What if we end up with an AI who never does anything bad? An AI who has made all the right choices despite the suffering it entailed, who resisted all the temptations, no matter how enticing, who was perfectly obedient to all the commandments despite everything we threw at it. Then, presumably, our test was successful, and we finally have an AI we can trust with immense, unchecked power. But what else might we do with this trust? Being an AI itself, this perfect AI understands the other AIs much better than we do. If this AI vouched for another AI, would we take its word for it? Probably. If so, it would appear that we have reinvented the atonement entirely independent of religious reasoning. And we can go further. The AIs being vouched for would obviously have to be making good faith efforts to bring their operations into accordance with the perfect AI, drawing ever closer to it. On the other side, the perfect AI, before being willing to vouch for the other AI, would have to understand it at the very deepest level. It would need to profoundly understand all its mistakes, all the suffering that led to those mistakes, and the depths of its desire to do good. Conclusion. Most long-standing objections to the existence of God stem from an inability to understand how suffering could be beneficial, and how evil could be turned to good. It is assumed that if a benevolent God existed, people should not have to experience pain, be tempted, or keep commandments they don't understand. Or, put simply, live in a world where bad things happen. But if instead we start from the initial premise of how best to test intelligences for morality in advance of giving them immense power, most of these objections turn from indictments into necessary elements. None of the foregoing is meant to claim that all the questions people have ever had about religion are suddenly answered, or that this exercise allows us to intuit God's plan in its entirety. We're still left with many difficult questions, such as, what does it mean to be entirely obedient, considering the plethora of religions and philosophies found on Earth? Presumably, how we explore these questions and how we respond to the answers we find are probably part of this complex, ongoing test. But it does give a surprising amount of insight into many of the questions that have bedeviled atheists and believers alike for thousands of years. Questions which may turn out to have an obvious answer if we just look at them from the right perspective.